This is Fresh Air. Vice President Dan Quayle and his Council on Competitiveness are under scrutiny in Washington. The council was created by President Bush in 1989 to review regulations issued by federal agencies. The council has the power to revise regulations which it decides could harm the competitiveness of American business. It's in the process of undoing or toning down many regulations. If the council gets its way, some of our protected wetlands would be open for development, private companies would be allowed to test drugs for FDA approval, and businesses would have fewer restrictions on releasing pollutants into the environment. Critics have charged that the council is operating in secrecy with powers beyond the law. The council is under investigation by congressional and consumer groups. My guest, Philip Hiltz, has been covering the story for the New York Times. I asked him for an example of how the council operates.
We have the Clean Air Act, which is a major piece of legislation, one of the most important in decades on the environment, that the EPA has been working on for a couple of years, trying to refine the proposals. How do you give a permit to a company that is going to pollute? To what degree will they be allowed? How much would it cost? When can you cut back pollution and so on? The EPA works through this, takes comments from industry, from environmentalists, from everybody, works out a regulation, writes it down, puts it out for public comment. Then it comes back after they read the public comments, they put it out finally. But now they've inserted the Council on Competitiveness right after that process. So that the White House can take another look after everybody's agreed and say, well, now there are a couple things in here that are really too expensive. For example, municipal waste. There was a rule in which you'd have to have a permit before you start an incinerator in your town and burn up your trash. EPA would give you a permit. But the rule was going to be, in order to get a permit, first you'd have to agree to recycle 25% of your trash. Then they'd let you burn the rest. The Council on Competitiveness came in and said, well, I don't think we like that. We'll just cut that one out. And we'll, if they want to, fine, we'll make it voluntary.
You're describing the situation where after the regulatory agency comes up with the regulations, puts it open to public hearings, revises the regulations, then the council has the right to come in and either further revise them or throw them out. Does the regulatory agency have any power to say, no, we refuse?
Well, this is an old issue that goes all the way back to the beginning, to the way the Constitution was written. The view of it in the courts and in the agencies for the last 100 years, say, is that the federal agencies are to interpret the laws passed by Congress. Now, the federal agencies are created by Congress. They're funded by Congress. So they're really agencies of Congress in a way. They carry out the Congress's will. But the president, under the Constitution, puts a check on that. These agencies which carry out the Congress's will are in the executive branch, and the president supervises them. So the belief is that the agency head is the one who should make the final decision. And then the president and his policies come into it in a kind of supervisory way. They say, the president says to the agency head, okay, you do these regulations, but I want you to do them according to my policy. I want you to pass you some changes. I want to make sure that you're sticking to our game plan. Otherwise, of course, I can fire you. So it's this tension between both sides. In theory, if an agency head said to the president, I'm simply not going to go along with you, he could probably maintain that position legally. He could probably get by in court. But in practice, it's very difficult for him to do that.
Critics of the vice president's Council on Competitiveness have said that the president is really being a hypocrite in this area. On the one hand, for instance, last year he signs the Clean Air Act and wants to take credit for being the environmental president. And then, meanwhile, the Council on Competitiveness completely tries to revise the act.
And he put in place William Riley at the head of EPA, who is a pretty active environmental guy. And so he's got things going in both directions, which I think is the way he wants it. The idea is the Clean Air Act is a really major piece of legislation, something that is a rational approach to handling the air and to handling pollution. On the other hand, he needs to be seen for his constituency to be anti-regulatory, to be anti-bureaucratic. So, and in this case, the vehicle is Dan Quayle. They want Dan Quayle to be out there being the spokesman of the right, being in a visible position like he never was, giving him some sway. So they handed him this job. You go police the regulatory agencies. So it is kind of goes two ways, but I think that's the way they want it.
Well, what impact do you think this has had on the image of Vice President Dan Quayle? His image has been that of the, well, he's always been the butt of the joke, mm-hmm. and considered a real lightweight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, this is for him almost all gain because he gets to be in the position of making substantial changes in very important regulations. Before, of course, he was getting all this criticism. Now he's in a position where he gets the criticism, but they're quite serious. It's no longer a laughing matter. The chairmen all over the Hill are getting very upset and are passing bills, holding hearings, trying to deal with this competitiveness council, which they consider an outlaw. And Quayle is really enjoying the new visibility and the new influence that comes with this job of overseeing regulations and driving the environmentalists and the people on the Hill crazy.
Congressman Henry Waxman, who chairs the House Subcommittee on Health and the Environment, has said that Vice President Quayle is running the council like a shadow government. I think part of the reason why Waxman made that criticism is because Quayle has given the council executive privilege, and the council has not been handing over information about itself, and representatives haven't been showing up when invited to attend hearings.
Yeah, the theory here is that the Council on Competitiveness is in the vice president's office, which is part of the executive office of the president. And the rule, according to the court so far, has been that in the executive office of the president, there may be deliberations that people in the branch may take positions, may argue positions completely secretly, so that it's possible to have an open discussion without fearing public reprisals. This is called the executive privilege. But then there's the question of this council, which is several removes from the president. And suppose it's not so much a matter of internal arguments over policy in the executive branch. Suppose it's a matter of actually changing regulations, acting as a regulatory agency. There was a decision in the, Court of Appeals in the district recently that said the predecessor to the Council on Competitiveness was acting as an agency. If it looks like an agency, acts like an agency, carries out policy, changes policy, it is an agency. So that it may have executive privileges when it goes talk to the president, but when it's dealing with the agencies, it's an agency. So it's kind of this funny thing in between the two. And what in Congress they've said is, well, if you're going to have this agency doing all these things, this council operating this way, we ought to see who they're dealing with. List the people who come in to talk to them, what industries are coming in, list the positions of the people coming in. If they come in with a proposal saying, let's change this and this, let's have it on paper so we can see it and argue with it.
So right now there's really no accountability?
No. They feel that this is really something that is their own prerogative. It has a kind of funny history, though, because the Office on Management and Budget in the White House, when Reagan first came in, did exactly the same sort of thing. They were reviewing regulations. They had secrecy in the beginning. But after fights with Congress over a few years, by about 1985 or 86, they said, okay, we agree. These things should be open. They set up all kinds of new procedures so that people calling in cannot call anybody on the staff. They can call only a certain person. When they call in, it has to be recorded. The proposals come in. They have to be put on a docket. They agreed to all of that. But just after agreeing to that, then the council comes up again, a new agency, again secrecy, and so on. So the people in Congress feel like they've been around this once before.
If you're just joining us, my guest is New York Times reporter Philip Hiltz, and he's been covering the story of the Vice President's Council on Competitiveness. We're going to take a short break, then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. New York Times reporter Philip Hiltz is my guest. He's been covering the story of Vice President Quayle's Council on Competitiveness. There's also the question of conflict of interest. There's a conflict of interest regulation in federal government that bars any official in the executive government from participating in any matter in which he has a financial interest. And the executive director of the council, Alan Hubbard, half owns a chemical company and has a fairly large stock holding in a power company.
Yeah, PSI.
In Indiana, yeah, Public Service Company of Indiana. Uh-huh. So now Vice President Quayle has given him a waiver of conflict of interest.
This is all very complicated because the shape of the conflict of interest rules is kind of vague, and it depends on who you ask. But in this case, what they've done is given him a waiver, given Hubbard a waiver. The vice president gave him the waiver, saying, you don't have to worry about these things, and if there is a problem, you can recuse yourself, take yourself out of a decision officially. But the view outside the White House is that this is quite illegal, that the idea of a waiver is completely contrary to the idea of a conflict of interest law. If you can waive the law, what's the point of it? If you can go in and have these dealings and not worry about them, why bother having a conflict of interest law in the first place?
So where does Alan Hubbard stand now with the conflict of interest regulation?
After the issue was raised, he decided that he should put all his holdings in a blind trust and give away the PSI stock to charity. The blind trust is a situation where he puts all his stock holdings and bonds and so on in the hands of a manager, and the manager handles it, doesn't ever tell him what's going on. So essentially he loses control of all his interests, but he doesn't lose the money, so it's still there. He has some sense of what it is. It's kind of a halfway step toward divesting yourself.
What about the vice president's financial interest? Does he have any financial interest that would pose a conflict of interest question about him?
Sure. Yeah, he's a businessman from Indiana as well. His are mostly in newspapers and pulp companies and so on. He has, it's unclear, but at least $350,000 in that. And he has not given himself a waiver, and he has not gone to a blind trust as Vice President Bush did when he was in the same sort of position at the top of one of these agencies. So the sense in Congress is, well, he's not even operating by the kind of standards that Mr. Bush has operated by or Mr. Reagan operated by. He is, again, kind of an outlaw. Why doesn't he divest himself? Why doesn't he stand back from those things so he can go ahead and get himself involved in these regulations without looking like he's on one side? The whole idea in conflict of interest academically is an interesting one because the basis of it is supposed to be that the people are permitted confidence in their leaders. They should not have to worry about whether there is a financial interest, whether this might actually affect somebody's judgment. The law is built all around the idea that if it appears that there could be something nefarious going on, then that is a conflict, and you should step back from it.
You mentioned that the vice president owns about $350,000 in a newspaper company, and the conflict there, I think, would center around recycling.
Yes.
Or one of the conflicts, anyways, potential conflicts of interest.
Yeah, there are others, but the recycling was one of the first rules that the Competitiveness Council dealt with, and this is the one we mentioned before, municipal waste. If you want to burn waste in your municipality, you have to go to EPA to get a permit, and the permit they will give to you only, this was the proposal, only if you're willing to recycle 25% at least in the beginning. And what Mr. Quayle stepped in and did was strip that out. He didn't like the idea of 25% recycling. He wanted it to be voluntary rather than mandatory, and he succeeded in that.
And perhaps we should mention that the company that he owns stock in uses virgin paper, not recycled paper.
Yeah, so that in theory would make it a competition between his company and the recycling companies, and he has taken a position which you could interpret as being on the side of the virgin paper companies against the recyclers.
You are one of the reporters covering this story and making the public aware of what the controversy is surrounding the council. There are several bodies that are investigating the council. Do you know how the administration is reacting to the press coverage and to the current investigations of the council?
Well, they love it. The idea of the visibility and getting this message out that they're being tough is what they really love. They complain, of course, about the way in which sentences are written and the way things are twisted around and so on. The point of view of the Congress that this all ought to be open at the White House. So they say, well, why shouldn't the deliberations in Congress be open? Why don't we see the staff in Congress, see who's going to visit them, the way they're trying to get us to say who's visiting us? So they complain about those things, but in general, they're just tremendously happy with it.
Even though a lot of the press coverage has been very critical of
it
the council.
It seems that way, but you have to remember what their mission is. They really are glad to be seen as feisty outsiders, people attacking federal government, people trying to preserve the rights and the privacy and the independence of businesses. This is what they've been doing.
Philip Hiltz, thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay, thank you.
Philip Hiltz is Washington correspondent for The New York Times. This is Fresh Air.